Spirit Radio Podcasts.
And now, the days around St. Patrick's Day are always a great time to hear about the impact of Irish people both here and around the world. And our next guest has been working in East Africa for the last 25 years, and in particular in the area of conflict resolution and peace building. His work was recognised in the US when he won the 2013 International Award from the Caring Institute, which is a prize that went to the Dalai Lama the previous year. And he's in Ireland at the moment speaking about his work, and including a big public event in Belfast on Wednesday. And on the line now from his native Roscommon to tell us more, we have Father Padraic Devine from the Shalom Centre for Conflict Resolution and Reconciliation. Father Padraic, you're very welcome to the show.
Good morning, and it's nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. And first of all, Father Padraic, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in conflict resolution in Kenya?
Well, a little bit about myself. Born in Roscommon, Ireland, and got ordained a priest in 1988 and landed in Western Tanzania. Basically was involved in development work out there, schools and hospitals, and spreading the good news. And then the Rwandan genocide broke out in 1994, so I was coordinating that work, the pastoral care of the refugees that came into Tanzania. Ended up then in quite a bit of administration for a huge number of missionaries spread all across Eastern Africa. And during that time became aware of killing and maiming and displacement, a huge amount of conflicts going on throughout Eastern Africa, and observing and indeed participating in caring for people in terms of dealing with the symptoms of conflict and poverty, but very poor, I suppose, a lot of us were, and myself included, in dealing with the underlying causes. And 2009, then, we set up the Shalom Center for Conflict Resolution and Reconciliation to tackle the underlying causes, the root causes of poverty and conflict. So we formed an interreligious group, and we got everybody qualified with a master's in peace studies or development studies, political science, or whatever was relevant to addressing these root causes. And that was the seeds for setting up Shalom.
Right. And as it sounds like, you know, hugely important work, you know, because you've got those, what you're describing, a sort of tribal conflict over, you know, the scarce resources of the country and long-standing enmity, I suppose. So what sort of things on a day-to-day basis does you know, the Shalom Centre get up to?
Well, we came up with a unique methodology that demands long-term commitment and insertion into the conflict environment. So what we did was we went into, especially up along the border with the Kenyan border with Somalia, Ethiopia, South Sudan and Uganda. So we went into those in conflict environments, in among the various tribes or ethnic groups, to be politically correct, and we began identifying who were the key influential opinion shapers in those conflict environments from each tribe, such as chiefs, elders, religious leaders, women's leaders, youth leaders, warriors and so on. And we began training them with analytical skills and peace-building techniques on what was causing the conflict with the ethnic other. And as we did that also, we began to research the root causes to the highest empirical standards, because we thought that was vital to do that, to counter all the speculation and conjecture and rumors that go on. And as that process went forward, we'd say over a period of 18 months then, the people themselves, you know, improved in their analytical skills, and in the research we went back to them with this to see did they own it, and if they owned it, we began to bring them together, because now they were speaking the same language and they had accepted that these were the root causes of the conflict. And what had began to emerge in the process was the openness of all sides to inter-ethnic education. So we began to further that route with them, because of course if you bring the children together, you also bring the parents together, and sooner or later the people with political influence, they have to listen to the voice of the people on the ground. And may I say at the outset here, I never met a parent yet in any conflict environment that didn't want a better future for their children.
Right. Yeah. So and that's presumably a very powerful way to actually work towards reconciliation, because you look at the next generation. So that sounds like a powerful tool.
Well, it is a powerful tool because, you know, the peace education nexus, as we call it, is so critically important because not only are you just looking at the next generation, but you're also looking at the needs of young people today going forward. And, of course, when they get the skill sets themselves, they're interested in developing their own character and, of course, developing themselves with skills and progressing, because I think in all those conflict environments, you have to keep two things in mind. One is that people have basic human needs that have to be met, or else you're going to have conflict. And secondly, people have a great desire to actualize their potential. I suppose, if I may as well just add in here, we often, in dealing with the people up there, and we from all different religions, and the one word that I suppose sums up all our work is reconciliation, even going back to the four Gospels. The reconciliation is so important in terms of our relationship with God, with one another, and indeed with ourselves, our inner peace. From the point of view of the gospel, in these African conflict environments where people are killed and maimed and displaced persistently, it's extremely difficult for gospel values to take deep root. You don't have to be a theological genius to work that out. Social and religious values like justice, truth, peace and mercy find it very difficult to become the norm where people can live normal lives and experience true peace. And secondly, on top of that, it's extremely difficult to have any sustainable development because periodically schools and hospitals, etc., churches become inoperable. So we felt it was time to address the root causes as distinct from continually pouring money in just addressing the symptoms. Of course, the symptoms are important, but they'll keep recurring unless we tackle the root causes.
You're describing there's so many challenges. How do you maintain hope and stay positive in the face of all that?
Well, I suppose because, first of all, you have great respect for the dignity of every human being and the rights of ethnic minorities in these places because in those environments where we work now, an area probably three times the size of Ireland, there's no roads or infrastructure. And, you know, you could get disillusioned if you were looking at statistics like that. There's probably 1.6 to 2 AK-47 guns per family in the environments we work in. But people have guns a lot of the time to protect themselves. It's not that they're aggressive by nature, but when you lack institutions like law and order and legal redress and medical and education, people are going to defend themselves because they have no other choice. And when you get in there among the people and you develop the trust, and it's not a quick thing. We spend 18 months developing trust in among all the leaders. And as I said, I think at the beginning, we're interreligious. So we have people from all faiths, and people from all faiths come into the training because I think it's the first time that they saw a real hope, because this group wasn't just a fly by night in and out and just doing a quick workshops and then writing up huge papers. And the other thing we're very conscious of is not to be parasitical, in the sense that whatever is given to us, we wanted to go as far as possible to help the people to help themselves.
Indeed. It's wonderful to hear you talk about it. I mean, you're in such a difficult area, but as you say, it sounds like one of the key factors here is consistency and staying there and continuing to do the work and showing people that you're committed to this reconciliation.
Absolutely. Now, you have nailed it there. That isn't a great word to use, but you have really put your finger on what's the importance there is the consistency. And not only that, but also to be qualified, because really, if you haven't got the skill sets yourself to go in among them, sometimes you could be conflict generating. And that's why it's really important, because I've even seen projects in the past being done by people who thought they were helping the process of peace development. But just to give an example, you could put down, you think people need water, you could put down the borehole. Everything looks great, you're helping people with water, but often the borehole could become the biggest source of the conflict unless the analysis done well and the management of that is put in place with the local people that they own the project.
Interesting stuff. I just have to ask you this. I mean, there's an example of something that's happened recently in April 2015. There was a terrible attack on a Garissa University in eastern Kenya by the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, which claimed the lives of nearly 150 people. What's the situation now for people living in that part of the country?
Well, I was just recently talking to Aziza Hassan, and Aziza Hassan, she did her master's with the Jesuits in the Jesuit master's program in Nairobi on peace studies and international relations, and she worked with us, and now she's up in Garissa. And we were just discussing about putting solar energy into schools up there, because we do a huge amount of that as part of the peace process. But the Al-Shabaab factor out of Somalia is still quite dangerous, because one never knows where an attack can come out of it. What's important, I think, in addressing the issue of religion and conflict is to look at issues like, and I often phrase it this way, that religion becomes a factor in conflict or is energized when quantitative institutional membership of just the institutions of religions or not so much denominations, but religious faith groups, when that becomes more important than qualitative spiritual transformation, then there's a real danger of groups like Al-Shabaab and ISIS and so on contributing to conflict. But generally speaking, over there, it's pretty stable at the moment, but one never knows when something can happen from or emerge from a group like Al-Shabaab.
Indeed. Now, you're speaking in Belfast on Wednesday, isn't that right? There's a talk going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in Ireland, of course, Shalom is registered. We're registered as an organization, as an NGO here, as a satellite to support the work in Africa. And we have memorandums of understanding with the Kennedy Institute in Maynooth, which have a master's program in conflict intervention, and also with Queen's, who have the George Mitchell Institute there, which is dealing with conflict transformation. So they invited would I give a talk to explain the methodology that we're applying in Eastern Africa to address inter-ethnic conflict. And so that's basically what I'm going to do on Wednesday in Queen's University, is the methodology in terms of theory and practice, the various components, and how the whole peace development nexus is interrelated. It's not so much that I'm coming there to tell them so much about how to do conflict management, but I think we all have something to learn from each other. So I think Shalom, you know, as we went forward, we were very aware of conflict issues in countries like Ireland, not just Ireland, that helped to inform us too on processes and what's positive and negative in various processes. So when I'm up there, I'm sure there will be questions on how the Northern Ireland experience as well relates to our experience of dealing with conflict in Africa. I suspect that there will be quite a number of academia and students there and people from all sides of the divide in Northern Ireland.
Oh, indeed. Well, it's fascinating to hear you talk about it. And I'm sure we can find out that your website is shalomconflictcentre.org, isn't it?
.org. And we have a headquarters at 16 Eyre Square, Galway, at the office of Berwick Solicitors. So it's in that building on Eyre Square, 16 Eyre Square. We're really looking for help continually in this process, because we have seen great success so far. We had the Irish government came out in the end of November, early December, and they came up to look at our work going on in the Turkana-Samburu conflict. And to God's blessing, that is one of the places we have had a lot of success. When the Minister Joe McHugh, the Minister for Overseas Development and the Diaspora, and all the representatives were there, and they actually owned and were able to verify the impact the process has had on their lives, because the road had opened between them, there was a joint market, and now there were four inter-ethnic schools operating between the two tribes.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's wonderful work, and Father Padraig Devine from the Shalom Centre for Conflict Resolution and Reconciliation, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and God bless all your readers, and we appreciate all your kindness and support to us.
Oh, well, not at all. It's great to speak to you. Great to speak to you, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.